Please listen carefully.
And now, live from a commandeered radio tower in Nunya Business, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys stuck in the back half of a two-person horse costume, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And we are still socially distant and remote and here and there, and but not everywhere.
Still hanging out together, but separately.
Hanging out, but separately. Hope everyone's being safe and staying safe, and we'll get through this together.
Yep.
So, what's everyone doing, Mikey? Everyone's talking about streaming stuff. Everyone's watching Netflix, yeah, Hulu.
Amazon, Roku
Disney
boxes.
Plus.
Yep. Everybody's catching up on all those binge shows they missed out on because everybody's got a whole bunch of time to sit around and watch some TV shows.
On this episode, we're bringing back an old favorite that we did a double episode on.
Yep.
About 30 episodes ago-ish. And one of the things that's newish, when did this come out?
Only about a month ago.
Only about a month ago, is part 3 of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Teenage Witch, DM.
Trademark. Mikey and I have expressed many times how much we like the show. One of our little pop props in the Zudio is our little Sabrina pop.
Yes, one of our totems.
One of our totems, our good luck charms. Wonderfully, as isn't the number 777 on the box?
It's perfect. Half evil, half spiritual. It's both numbers. It's great.
Hilarious. So, chapter, they're called chapters.
Yes.
They're in parts.
Part so this one, was part two, part three.
So this was part three. And so do we want, what shall we, shoot? Let's give them, so there will be spoilers, right? Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a little spoiler heavy. We'll try not to, you know, blow big plot points, but we are going to be talking about the entire season.
Right. We're going to talk about the entire season. Hopefully you saw one and two. I guess we can give you a little backstory on the feel and what we had going on in the previous seasons.
Yep.
So we're definitely going to spoil those. but we'll try to tread a little lightly on three, but we're going to give you the pizza rating and what we thought.
There you go.
And everything. But we get excited sometimes, and it's hard for us not to bring up stuff. But season one and two, Mikey, what do the folks need to know? Other than they could just go back and listen to our old episodes, but you can do that after.
Yeah, you can go back to listen to them to get the full details. But I think we both were pretty positive on both part one and part two so far. It's been full speed ahead on both parts. No real bummer episodes, no real letdowns, but it's the antithesis of the old Sabrina the Teenage Witch from the 90s. This is new, edgier, darker, way more occult, way more graphic, way more involved telling of Sabrina. It is based on the graphic novel by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa. He is one of the producers on the show, so they're sticking really close to the comic book. I don't think you haven't read the series, have you, Kevin?
I haven't.
Okay,
I should though, because it is. I think the artwork at the beginning is very similar to the artwork that's in the comic, right?
Oh, that's one of the reasons I think we were both hooked. Is the intro sequence, the graphic novel style, is just fantastic. But I haven't read the series either. It is definitely something I'll go back and check out because the show keeps getting. It just keeps leveling up. Like, power creep is a thing that we're aware of as nerds, and they're doing a really good job with that, and just really complex interwoven stories and cool spells. What about you? What are your thoughts on part one and part two?
So, part one and part two, there, I had the whole problem with, well, let's kind of just, for the folks that don't know.
There you go.
Let's just tell them what the basic thing is. So, if you're familiar with Sabrina the Teenage Witch from the 90s, is it the 90s? Early 2000s. Both.
Started in the 90s, though, yeah.
With Melissa Joan Hart. The bones are there. The story's very similar as far as the characters and what's happening. So you have Sabrina, who's a teenager,
yep,
who finds out that she's a witch and finds out that her aunts that she lives with are witches. And she has a cat, and as her familiar.
Salem,
Salem. And her boyfriend's Harvey, which is, I believe, the same name in the other series.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a best friend, Roz. She's got another best friend who at the time well, eventually becomes Theo, starts off, what did Theo start off as? Look at me, I'm so,
the actor is Lachlan. I can't remember the original character's name. I'll look it up real quick.
It was Susie.
Yes.
Look at us. We're not even going to dead name the character.
There you go.
We're just like, you're Theo now.
Exactly.
That's fine with us. And so it's a darker, it's The Chilling. So it's a darker take. It's related to it's the same people who do Riverdale. So it has a lot of that kind of how sensibilities, but it makes much more sense to do that with Sabrina because she's a witch and the darkness exists in witchiness. You can go there easier. The Riverdale thing is weird to me. It's something that they did with a cartoon at one point. I remember there's a really goofy, it's not called Riverdale. It's what's that thing called?
Archie.
Who's the kid? Yeah. There's this weird Archie cartoon where he's like Archie crossed with X-Files basically.
Okay.
It's terrible. But
I like the premise.
That's kind of like what Riverdale is, sort of.
Because you're talking about the reboot of Riverdale. I haven't watched any of that, but is that a darker tone kind of like Sabrina just with high school kids?
Yeah, I haven't watched tons of it. Okay. I watched enough of it to go,
not for me.
What? Yeah. It's weird that it works well with one, but it doesn't the other. And it's the witch thing,
is
what does it. Because the supernatural is already there.
I remember they tried to do the same thing with Teen Wolf. They tried to make a TV show based off the Michael J. Fox movie. And I was like, I don't get it. Not for me.
Yeah.
But
anyway, that's the basic. It's a teenager and she's trying to balance her life in the mortal world and life in the witch world.
Yep.
And that's basically where it starts. And it starts off simply and then just stuff just gets turned up to 11 and just gets ramped up over time. And you learn more and more about her backstory and it gets more and more complicated.
She has deals with the devil and the Book of the Beast and certain obligations she has to uphold. Yeah.
Yeah. This is straight playing off of her cast name's Salem. So they ran with it. They're doing the witches are in league with the devil type witches, like Salem witch trial.
Yep.
Type witches.
Satanic witches.
Yeah. So that's what you got here. And again, we've mentioned this before. One of the funnest parts about this is how the show managed to anger both sides of the spectrum. Both the Christians don't like it because they think it's making Satan seem awesome. Yep. And the Satanists don't like it because they're doing everything wrong.
Yep.
They're using their symbols in a way which isn't proper to them, which is hilarious to me.
This comes up a whole bunch in part three as well, so I'll talk about it a little bit later. But one of the things I do enjoy about this show is like they pull from literature and they pull from mythos and mythology, and they do a really smart job of incorporating it all in not really a like slanderous way for anybody's account. It's sort of like they're poking at everybody, but also including everybody. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Really fun.
So we did like season one and two quite a bit. I had a problem with Harvey's brother got raised from the dead at one point.
Yep.
And he needed to be disposed of. And they had Harvey do it. And I disagreed with that. And I want it to be different, but it's so much stuff has passed now that I kind of whatever.
Forgiven and forgotten. But you did have a cool alternate storyline about Harvey that was in our old episodes that you can go back and check out.
Yeah. Yeah. I had what I would have done. But. But unlike, and this is where this is a kind of one of our, what do you want to call it? One of the tent poles of our podcast is that you can watch a show, you can like the show, you can disagree with one aspect of what they do. You can also come up with a way that you think they could have done it better, but you can also continue to like the show and continue to watch it as more episodes come out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're ruining your own fun if I was just like, that's dumb. I don't like what they did with Harvey. I'm never watching the show again.
Yeah.
And then
if you're only expecting it to go one way and you only have one expectation of it, you're going to sort of set yourself up for failure. I agree.
Yes. I'm looking at you, fellow Star Wars fans.
I'm with you. But we are talking about part three for this episode. I guess we can give a quick overview of where we left off in season two. Things are all pretty much gone to crap, kind of resolved. They're really good. The show's really good about ending on a cliffhanger that's like, some things are wrapped up, but other things aren't.
Yeah, so the big spoiler is, here's the big spoiler.
Dun, dun, dun.
We find out that Sabrina's parents aren't totally her parents.
Nope.
We find out that her parents have passed.
Yep.
Mysteriously, sort of. And we find out that they were having trouble conceiving a child, so Mr. Spellman made a deal with the devil.
A deal with the devil.
And Sabrina is half Satan.
Half Satan, half mortal.
Sabrina's kind of the Antichrist.
Yep. Lucifer is her dad.
Yes. So, yeah, that was a trip. And what's hilarious is that he's good old Lucifer, which is neat. He goes from being scary goat guy to getting his angel form back without the wings because they were ripped off by God.
Yep. But he has the cool scars and he is the suave. Like, he is angelic looking for being the evil bad guy. It's like, oh, I get it.
That actor's a good looking fella.
Yeah, it's Luke Cook, man. He's a good looking fellow.
Yeah. And the funny dynamic to that, and this was the season two dynamic, was that he's like, I'm your dad. And she's like, okay, I'm your rebellious teenage daughter. That's basically how she acts. She doesn't want to be evil and queen of hell and all those kind of things.
Yeah, not at all. She's trying to find out ways to thwart it at every turn.
Yeah. And the big thwarting at the end is they are trying to trap Lucifer. I like using Lucifer. They're trying to trap Lucifer. And at first they reward you for watching previous seasons because they tried to trap him in the
Asheron.
What's it called? Yeah. How do you say it?
I guess they say Acheron. I always want to say
Acheron.
Acheron, but it's A-C-H-E-R-O-N.
Okay. Yeah, Acheron. So the Acheron had Batty Bat, the sleep demon, in it. And they released Batty Bat, so they have an empty Acheron. Apparently you can take demons and trap them in containers.
Yep, Tupperware style.
Which is interesting because I just thought of it. They do that in Disenchantment.
And in Ghostbusters.
And in Ghostbusters. So they decide to try to take this Acheron and trap Lucifer.
But that's like,
right?
Sorry, that's like an old D&D thing, right? The old like being able to trap a demon in a container.
Yeah, I think that's old, like mythos. I think that's why it
shows up.
Keeps showing up.
There you go.
So they decide, okay, we're going to trap him in this Acheron, but you can't keep Lucifer in an Acheron. He's too powerful, so it fails.
Yes.
But then they realize that he can be kept in a flesh Acheron, which is a person.
And awesome sounding.
Yeah. So Sabrina's new boyfriend, Nicholas Scratch, best name in the show,
yep.
Basically becomes the volunteers. He volunteers, right?
Yeah, because he was actually hanging out with the whole twist of season two or part two was that Nicholas Scratch was getting close to Sabrina on behalf of the Dark Lord to just keep tabs on her.
That's right. That's
right. He started to actually care for her, that usual romantic comedy trope. He's like, I actually care for you, even though I was paid to hang out with you.
Yes.
So in retribution or repayment, he sort of says, I'll be the flesh sacrifice so we can make this plan happen.
Yes. And it works, which is crazy.
Yep. But now Sabrina's new boyfriend is possessed by Lucifer.
Yeah, but they're in there wrestling and fighting, so no one has control.
Yep.
And then he also kind of becomes the pet to Lilith, who is now the queen of hell.
Miss Wardwell. We learn her whole backstory, yes.
Yes. And as part of Sabrina giving the queen of hell title to Lilith.
Yep.
Stick with us here. This is getting Game of Thrones. So they're down in hell. There's like a council, a noble council. They're like the lords of hell, right?
Yeah. It's the court of hell. The dukes and the duchesses and whatever they're
actually. And they're basically like Sabrina's supposed to be the queen. And then she's like, I don't want to be. And then they come up with that she's underage.
Yep.
So Lilith is going to be her regent. And then she's like, I'll just let you do everything and we'll just say that. So Liz is like, cool. And then she's like, in payment, can I have my teacher back?
And then Miss Wargle comes back all dazed and confused, like, I did what? What? Where did that time go?
Where was I? What's happening? Well, I wish I could do that after this whole thing's going on right now. Can I just wake up and be like, what happened?
Yep.
Is everything good now?
You can do the Rip Van Winkle nap. I'll call you in about 40 days and just wake you up.
So that's where we left off pretty much, right?
Yeah.
And all her friends realize who she is now,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of create like a Scooby gang,
oh,
but they call themselves the Fright Club?
The Fright Club, which is the name of their club and also the name of the band that shows up in part three. I love it.
Yeah, so that's where we left off in part two. So part three starts where Lilith is the queen of hell. Sabrina doesn't think she has to deal with it anymore.
Yep.
But then she starts feeling bad about what happened to her boyfriend. Nicholas Scratch.
Yeah, the cliffhanger and then the pickup for the cliffhanger for part two and the pickup for season three is that the Sabrina's line is like, well, what do we want to do tonight? Do we want to go see a movie? Do we want to go get some ice cream? And Sabrina's like, let's go to hell and get my boyfriend back. And then between season, they released a music video of Sabrina singing about how she's going to hell to get her boyfriend back. And then, bang, that's where we start. She's like, all right, let's go to hell. Let's get my boyfriend back.
That silly video that came out was such a preview of, like, this is what we're doing next season.
Yeah.
That, like, we didn't realize how much that video was telling of the – because – overall, yeah, let's talk a little bit about just overall.
Let's do it.
So overall, this season was a little bit lighter, sillier. I don't know if lighter is the right thing to use because there are some plenty dark moments. But I would say that it comes up for air much more than any previous seasons did, as far as the lightness, the tone, the campiness, almost in some cases.
No, I'm with you. I think you hit the nail on the head when you were speculating that it's because the dark events of the show go so deep and heavy that I think they got to up the balance of the lighter moments to sort of even it out, because they're really good about that balance. Like, it never really gets too heavy or too dense.
Yeah, but I would say that the previous season, it was more kind of consistently dark the whole way through.
Yeah, I get it. But this season has musical interludes and band practice and, yes, a whole bunch of lighthearted fare.
Yeah, they were very much, we've used before that there's a lot of parallels between this and Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, very much so.
And this season was like, they seemed to almost double down on it in that respect.
I got you.
Because that's kind of the thing, or... They still go darker because the Joss Whedon stuff, I mean, it has its darkness in there, but he never goes like really super dark other than killing the mom.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's super dark. But he was always the one that if he could fit a joke in there or at least one comedic beat, he would, just to keep it moving.
Yeah. Right. And Sabrina really doesn't do that. Sabrina's more like, we're being dark right now, but don't worry, we're going to be light but we're going to get dark again.
Yep.
So... yeah.
I also think it's a little bit of a case of this is part three, so all the characters have been laid out. You know the environment, you know the world, you know the people. So instead of having to take time to explain like the motivations for everybody, it's just like, we're going to take these toys and we're going to play with them. Because there's a lot that happens over 8 episodes. It's just like, pow, 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 this happens. But it's all, whether it's upbeat or really dark, you already know, like, everything makes sense and they don't have to, they're not doing a whole bunch of epilogue. It's pretty great.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a lot of the things, like we said, Theo is a trans character in it who started off as Susie and decided he was Theo and struggled through that through the previous two seasons, but now this season Theo's just Theo.
Yep.
And playing drums in the band and being Theo. And then you got her friend Roz, who found out that she had the cunning, which is kind of like a psychic type ability.
Yep.
And she was struck blind, but then Sabrina brought her sight back. And that was all the struggles of the previous seasons. And now she's just, first of all, they've totally changed her look and she looks great. And
everybody sort of leveled up for this part of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because before they made her really bookish, I guess would be the word.
Yeah.
To use, and now she's just like, I'm one of the cheerleaders.
That is one of the lighthearted, campy moments of this part, is that Roz is the instigator for having Roz and Sabrina be cheerleaders as part of their mortal world balance. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, and it's kind of neat because it's almost like, I mean, they're supposed to be in high school, which we have to remember because a lot of these actors are the classic early 20s, actually, not really high school.
Kind of Saved by the Bell style, yeah.
Yeah. But you have to realize that, you know, that happens with kids in high school. They'll go from being nerdy and bookish to basically going through puberty or whatever.
Yes.
And will totally change. So her whole thing of going through that, the blindness and the cunning and figuring out her powers, was kind of like almost a puberty analog.
Yeah. And that's happening for characters all over the series, which is cool. And it's all happening in different ways, but it's definitely an allegory of, you're facing maturity or becoming a full witch. There are parallels for sure.
And then old Harvey is pretty much over the fact that he's not worried about being called a chicken anymore.
Yep.
He's confronted his demons, and he and Roz are together, and they're having fun, even though we find out later,
dun, dun, dun.
Is she really the one he loves?
Well, okay, well, if we're still doing a little bit of broad strokes, this is my one sort of thumbs down on this season so far, is that...
Ooh, thumbs down.
I know, but it's a quibble because it's balanced by some awesome stuff too, but... This season is very love triangle-y. It's all about, like, every character has a relationship with another character, and they have to flesh them all out. They do. I mean, props to them for fleshing out everybody's, like, fights and intentions and motivations, but I can only take so much teen drama, love triangle, like, angst, like, do you love me? I love you. I don't love you. I do love my heart.
Oh yeah, that's the thing about this season. It was very, like I said, it felt like they were kind of being like Buffy 90s show, let's go ahead and just double down on it. It felt very 90s to me sometimes,
yeah.
As far as the, I mean, it is a WB show. I was about to say it had that WB teen. It is.
Yes.
So it's kind of just doing what it do. But yeah, there it was very, what show is trying, I wanted to say One Tree Hill, but I don't even know what that show is. Why did that show come to mind? Have I ever seen that show? What's that show about?
One Tree Hill, I think, is about a family and a small town. I think maybe you're thinking The OC with all the pretty people in California having different love triangles and relationships.
I don't know what that show is either. I don't even know what I was thinking about.
But it is, I mean, it is that aspect of it. It's just, it's cool to see the relationships, but I think Zelda Spellman, as in character, says, I can't stand teen angst, or maybe Lilith says it, but I was just like, I'm that opinion 100%. But it makes sense because... The aspect of it is, like we were saying, Sabrina goes to hell to get her boyfriend back, which she does, and becomes queen of hell. A little bit of spoiler, but that's first episode, so whatever. But because she rescued Nick from hell, now their relationship has been upgraded to, I saved your life from the very pits of hell. You know, what do you owe me, or how does this turn out, and why aren't you the same, and what happened to my boyfriend? And it's like, I get it, makes sense. Don't really care about it.
Oh, man. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's like one of the main through lines of the entire season.
And that's where I put my thumbs down. That's where I check the notifications on my phone for a few minutes. But I still stay tuned in, you know?
That's okay. Well, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. That first episode was interesting. They did a whole kind of Wizard of Oz homage.
Yeah, they go to hell.
It wasn't kind of. It was definitely a Wizard of Oz homage.
They had to follow the Blood Red Road.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it was okay. So here's some of the fun things that made me go, "What?
Go for it."
I'm gonna throw my nitpicks out there because overall, this was a pretty enjoyable season to me. But there's plenty of things that I didn't get. So one of the things I didn't get is they go down to hell and they arm themselves smartly, but they arm themselves strangely. So Theo's got a shotgun or rifle or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Harvey has a pickaxe from the mines, like he's in Minecraft or something, like he's Steve. And I forget what Roz had.
Her cunning.
Her bat.
So. Oh, maybe a bat, yep.
But the thing is that here's why it bumped me. And you're great for bringing back the Acheron that had Batty Bat in it and all that kind of stuff, but you've shown us things in the show before, and you've shown us that Harvey has an entire gun rack in his house.
True.
There's like 5 or 6 guns in that gun rack. His dad hunts, and he's been hunting with his dad before, so there's 3 guns right there. His dad's gun, his brother's gun, his gun. And then we all well know that anyone who's like his dad has more than 3 guns. Come on. So that bummed me because I'm like, you only bring one gun with you? I mean, you're bringing a pickaxe is your weapon of choice?
Pickaxe. That is a little silly. The only way I could think to defend it is that it's like it's Harvey's character sheet. That's what is in his inventory. Yes, he has guns, but you don't need to reload a pickaxe. That's like his default. You know, if he runs out of everything else, Harvey always has a pickaxe. I don't know.
Harvey has a... I have a really high... Can I use my mining skill for wielding a pickaxe?
That's right.
This is really high.
He uses his pickaxe quite a few times throughout the season, so
I know
it is his not his totem, but it is his weapon of choice. I would say
I know it's hilarious. It kind of gets to the point, but you're right. It gets to the point where it shows up so much, you're just like, oh, he just likes breaking stuff with that thing.
Yep. But it is cool logic. It is cool that they have to traverse hell bathed in body water, corpse water, and dead man shoes. I mean, they're keeping up with the logic and the sort of mythos of everything, but hell isn't your typical like hellfire escape where it's just tormented souls all over the place. It's closer to Dante's Inferno, where it's the nine circles of hell.
Yeah.
And that was cool. It had a little bit of a Beetlejuice vibe to it, but it's actually, you know, it's pulling from cool references that actually have a world and a narrative built into it.
Yeah.
Went a little fast because it's only one episode, but I got to watch three episodes of their trials and tribulations on that.
It was kind of cool how they got in there, too, with they went over to the painting at a
Dorian Gray's bar, yes.
Yeah. That Dorian Gray character, he showed up a whole lot more in this season.
And
didn't he? He seemed to show up more.
Yeah, because
maybe he was more in last season, but I don't know. He just seemed to have more of an impact on me this season.
And the bar was more of a set piece because of all the portals and everything, so he definitely played more of a feature part. This is kind of spoilers, but I fell in love with Dorian Gray, the character, when the whole angel blood aspect of the story came into play. And he was helping out, but then he was also typical Dorian Gray. He's like, sorry, this is how I am. It can't be helped. And I was like, that's perfect character right there. So
he's
cool.
He's trying to heal his pimple that he's not supposed to have because he's supposed to be young and beautiful forever. But
yep.
That guy was stuck in a flesh Acheron.
Yep.
So that's one of the cool aspects of this thing. This is kind of spoilery, but not really, but whatever.
Yep.
So they get Nick back. We already said they get Nick back. Mm-hmm. And they get Lucifer out of him, but they have to put him in another flesh Acheron. And they do that by putting him in the captured Father Blackwood.
That was just Blackwood.
Because Ambrose and Prudence.
Yep.
Find Father Blackwood in some kind of weird time war portal thing. Whatever. I don't know. They find him and he's
like...
They
find him in Scotland. He's hanging out at Loch Ness. That's so rad. Sorry.
Yeah. But his babies are grown. And it's one of those, it's been 20 years.
Yes, there is an aspect of time magic to most of this season, but that is when it gets first introduced with him. And he's like, it's only been 4 months. He's like, no, I've been doing spells and training and researching for 15 years. And his children, Judith and Judas, come back and they're like fully grown now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. But Prudence wants to kill him. Is Ambrose the one who realizes that he can use him for the switch? Or how did that happen?
Well, Ambrose becomes paranoid because we get introduced to one of the aspects of season three with when we meet up with Blackwood in Scotland, and that he's bringing some magic out of the water, and he's referencing the ancient ones, the old ones, and the Eldritch terrors. So Ambrose hears that, and he's like, oh no, this is a bigger bad than the bad we're facing. And so he has to show Blackwood mercy to try and figure out, you know, what's going on here.
Yes.
And so they teleport Blackwood back to the house to interrogate him. And it just so happens that when they teleport back to the Spellman house, Sabrina's there. She's like, I need another flesh Acheron. Oh, look, here's one right here.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And it was a very poor choice because Father Blackwood ended up not wrestling with Lucifer.
Yes. They ended up banding together a little bit. But that's Blackwood. Yeah. He Richard Coyle, man. He's great as always. And it was kind of funny to see wilderness version of Blackwood, because that's the first time in the show I've noticed that he reminded me of his character from the British show Coupling we were talking about. Because he had his ragged hair and kind of Jesus-y looking, and he had that same sort of ragtag look in the sitcom. And I was like, oh, that's him. That's so funny. But that's Blackwood.
Father Blackwood.
But yeah, that's Father Blackwood. He becomes the new flesh Acheron. I can't say that word right. It sounds weird to me saying it that way, but... That's where we leave off with him, and he's hanging out with Lucifer and making plots as per usual.
Yep.
But in addition to the Eldritch Terrors as a theme coming up, one of the other themes that they're bringing in part three that I thought was really cool is the whole pagan side of witches.
Yes.
There's a new carnival in town, and they're giving a creepy hint to them, like something's off with them, and you learn that they are pagan witches in balance to the satanic witches that Sabrina and her coven are a part of. And it's still deep mythology. It's just as quote-unquote respectful to pagan witches that it is to satanic witches, and it's so cool to see.
Yeah, at first this kind of threw me for a second because I got almost, I don't know if you can be too nerdy
I get
sometimes, but when, like you had just mentioned a second ago about Father Blackwood, and there was mention of the Old Ones.
Yes.
And the Old Ones to me hit me, just immediately make me think of Call of Cthulhu. So I was like, are they bringing Cthulhu things in here?
Well,
and how he
Cthulhu is part of the Eldritch Terrors, is he not? Like in that classification?
He should be, but okay. He never showed up.
Okay.
So but. I thought that the whole thing was leading up to a Cthulhu thing happening, but they just went with the Green Man or whatever the heck, something else.
Yes.
But which is fine. It was, again, this is one of those things where don't be disappointed it didn't go the way you thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
But at first I was like, oh, are they doing Cthulhu? Because when that, spoiler a little, when that creature shows up with the egg from the lock or mm-hmm. whatever he was, that was very Cthulhu-y feeling to me.
That was my question to you. That's my speculation.
Yeah.
Is that a little Cthulhu egg?
I don't know. Well, it's a time egg, apparently.
But
spoilers!
Isn't that what Cthulhu is in charge of? Warping time and madness and time and space? Like, isn't that part of his
whole...
Yeah,
okay. Well, maybe. Maybe they are. Maybe they are making a reference to it.
But here's my thumbs up to that. The fact that they're referencing it means it's in the world, which means it's a possibility. Maybe not now, but part four, part five? Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Possibility. It was that whole the pagan carnival thing pretty much took up the whole rest of the season. That's the main set piece.
Yep. That's the main baddie is the main conflict in this season, is that the pagan witches are trying to establish roots and the satanic witches are like, nope, we live here.
And they came back to power because Lucifer's stuck in that Akron, so.
Yep, everybody's getting a little weaker because the Dark Lord is no longer around, and Sabrina is sort of lacking at her new job as Queen of Hell. So.
Right, that's why good old Dorian Gray has a pimple.
Yep, and all the witches are catching colds. It's kind of silly. It was a little on topic. I was like, no, don't talk about colds. But I was like, oh, wait, this is an evil show. I get it. It makes me a little scared. I like it. And then...
Yeah. That was a fun aspect. That was very interesting. And like when they're meeting with the witch's council and they're like trying not to act like their powers are fading.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yep.
So we don't have to go through the whole breakdown of everything, but what are some, your biggest nitpick was the love triangle.
Yeah. Love triangle, romance, everybody, all the, like, I get it. It was a good drama, but that's not what I was interested in. Like, you were thinking it was going to be Cthulhu based. I was hoping it'd be a little bit more magic and a little less lovey dovey.
Yeah. My biggest nitpick was probably the stuff that I think you like, is that like the band thing and the cheerleader practice. I mean, I get it. And, you know, I'm sure everyone's very happy to see those actresses jumping around in cheerleader outfits and everything. But to me, it was like, okay.
But, okay, so I'll defend. Yes, I agree with you, but allow me to retort and defend. The music of this season was cool because the band practice, you get two songs. You get My Sharona by The Knack and Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus. I don't think I've ever heard Teenage Dirtbag in a song ever. And the fact they put it in there was ridiculous. And then the cheerleading, the scenes, it was like having a little musical interlude, yes, which is weird because why do characters bust out into song? I'm with you on that. But it was also so Bring It On, and I love the movie Bring It On. Because they did It's Tricky by Run DMC and Hey Mickey by Tony Basil. You know, the Hey Mickey, you're so fine, you're so fine. That's great.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It just was like, it always made me go, what's happening right now? And sometimes you can like know too much about what's going on with like the actors and stuff. And I know that Ross Lynch has a band, so it makes me wonder if it's one of those like, tell your agent, see if I can, you know, we can have a band type thing. You know what I mean?
Hey, Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things has a band. It must be a new packaging deal, maybe.
But I don't know. It just when I see that, I'm like, oh, did this happen? Because it happens sometimes when shows get successful and then later seasons, suddenly it's like this guy has like a music career outside this and his agent sometimes finagled him to have him sing in the show
yeah,
or whatever.
I get it.
So I know, whatever.
But they also had whoever was in charge of the music for a show for Sabrina also included Arctic Monkeys in the Beta Band. So they're doing a lot of random weird musical cuts and I think I'm just on board for all of them. They seem deliberate, even though they are weird and sort of out of the blue.
Those are definitely nitpicks.
I got
for
you.
For sure. Mm-hmm. What are some of the highlights you had? The least spoilerly you can get, the better, I guess. But, I mean, sometimes you have to get into it.
Yeah. I won't try not to blow plot points, but there are going to be some character names and descriptions just because one of my favorite things about the show is that they're pulling from really not obscure references, but they're pulling from deep references. And they're keeping the mythology, like I said, intact and sort of there's extra behind everything they do for a reason. The character Robin gets a reveal later in the season that's wonderful. It's amazing. There's the carnival people, like we said, not only do the pagan spells represent like pagan witchcraft where it's very nature-based and, you know, mm-hmm. very celestial-based and they deal with the moon and the earth and all that as a counterpoint to the whole like Christian-based satanic witches, just very well thought out. But here's the one character I will spoil is that they have a Gorgon in this show. And a Gorgon is the species that Medusa and her sister was. It's a snake lady.
Yep.
Okay. So she's in this. And this is, I'm going to nerd out for just 1 second just because it was a huge highlight for me. So one, you have Gorgons and Medusa coming in. That's Greek mythology in a witch show that started mm-hmm. off Christian-based. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They give her the name Nagini, right?
Yes.
Which is a reference to Rudyard Kipling's Rikki Tikki Tavi. Mm-hmm. It's an old snake character.
Yep.
But that's the same reference that Harry Potter pulled from when they did Voldemort's snake Nagini. Like it's all mm-hmm. it's lore that has existed before.
Even in Dungeons and Dragons.
Really?
They have the snakes, yeah.
That's awesome. They do that one more time. This was a little moment that happens between Mary Wardwell and Father Blackwood. There's stuff going on, things are happening in the interim, but Father Blackwood goes to visit Mary Wardwell and he introduces himself as Father Brown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she thinks he's a priest because he's back to looking suave, but he's got a glamour on that makes him look like a priest. Father Brown, I'm going to really nerd read into this, is a reference to Young Goodman Brown, the old Nathaniel Hawthorne story that is a tale about a person like going against their faith and traveling through the woods on a perilous journey to sort of question God and resist the devil. Like it's that deep, but I think they just made that reference in that name to show like all of this literature and lore is part of it because it's such a quick moment. But I was like, why Father Brown? That had to be a choice, and to have it be that reference it was mind blowing to me. So I was like, some really cool nerdy writers doing the silly things in the show.
Oh yeah, even like and going back to the Medusa like character, I remember when there's a point when Harvey's like, I saw Clash of the Titans, I know how to handle this type thing.
And they turn it on its head.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah. I love it when stuff does like, hey man, this stuff exists. Does it exist in your world that you have like seen a movie and you're like, hey, this kind of Shaun of the Dead-y type thing where it's like, oh, I've seen zombie movies before.
Yeah.
I think I know what to do here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they continue the deep dives on Christianity. There's a quest quest challenge that happens with the people in hell, the unholy regalia. But man, they pull so much lore in that from Christian, like actual like biblical stories, and it all fits in seamlessly. Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah. So this isn't too spoilery, but Sabrina has to. She gets challenged for her throne by
Prince Caliban.
Prince Caliban.
One nerd point, though. The name Caliban comes from Shakespeare and the Caliban character in Tempest. They're pulling from Shakespeare, too.
Yeah. Prince Caliban's made out of clay.
Yeah.
And seems like he was just created to challenge her for the throne. And it's weird that there's so many rules in hell. You'd think that there wouldn't be any rules there.
But it's the logic to the show. But yeah,
I know. But apparently, if you can bring all or bring, earn, get. Capture,
find, and conquest, yes.
Yes, if you get all the three items of the unholy regalia, you will be king of hell.
Yes, much so, like the Triwizard Tournament in Harry Potter, this is a challenge to see who will come out on top.
And the three things are so cool from they're all Christian lore items.
They are.
And you've got the crown of King Herod, the baby murderer from the New Testament, it's part of the Christmas story.
Yep.
Well, a little after or during. It's the part of the Christmas story they don't usually cover in church. So if people are like, "What are you talking about?" It's in there.
It's in there.
And then also the was the second one was the bowl, which Pontius Pilate cleaned his hands, washed his hands of the crucifixion of Jesus, which is, man, that's when, this freaking Barnabas was in that, Barabbas.
Yeah.
But that's crazy.
That's a character from the old story. Yeah, he's the thief that got pardoned. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the final one is the Judas's pieces of silver he was paid for betraying Jesus.
Yep.
So it's real interesting because, and we mentioned this before, is that they're saying like, okay, if Lucifer's here, then that means God's here.
Yes.
And if God's here, that means Jesus is a thing too.
Although they call him the Nazarene, which I think is just
the Nazarene.
Yeah.
I know. But it's real interesting because that opens up all kinds of crazy possibilities for anything in the future where they want to go with that kind of stuff. They've just tiptoed around that, and I think they've been doing that on purpose. And they doubled down on the pagan thing this season, I think, to kind of avoid some of that stuff. But yeah.
Speaking of this show, like going to new places and exploring different realms of like the occult, I guess, or religious, both in measure. In episode 3, Aunt Zelda actually does, she's chastising Sabrina and she goes, first you go through purgatory, then you go to hell. What's next? Heaven? And then the conversation moves on. But I'm pretty sure that was just a quick throwaway to be like, we might be going to heaven next part.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know what she'd do up there, but it's definitely a possibility of realms she can at least challenge or visit.
Right, right. So some of the stuff I liked about this season were they went ahead and, like we said, you think they were doing a balancing of like, here's this light stuff because we're going to go really dark. And they did go really dark in that they off some characters. Like in previous things, when characters got killed, they always somehow got resurrected.
Yes.
But this time, we got some characters, they're gone forever. They're permanently, I mean, they're minor characters or sub-characters.
Yes.
But still, they're sub-characters that I ended up liking. And, man, they got taken out. So, I'm not going to say who, but it was like, whoa.
But they were definitely trimming some story threads because now they no longer have to carry all threads through all parts. So,
yeah.
It was surprising, but none of them felt real cheap, you know?
No, they didn't feel cheap at all. They hurt.
Yeah.
They were like, because they did a good job of like, some of those characters had been previously resurrected.
Yes.
So, and the Church of Night was decimated. So you kind of were able to take note of who was left.
Yep.
So you're like, oh, that person's still there. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when something bad happens to him, you're like, oh, no.
But because the show is good, all the deaths still fit into the rules of logic. It comes back to, like, all power has a cost, all choices have consequence, you know, and all things aren't really foreseen as they may be, you know, even with magic and being able to just spell things away.
Right.
I love it.
So before we do our pizza rating, I think we need to totally spoil the end of it because we have to talk about it.
Let's do it.
Because it leads up to the next season. So, hey, everybody, if you haven't seen it, pause, finish Sabrina. And come back because the ending was a pretty epic thing that happened and got kind of twisty, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly.
Wibbly-wobbly indeed.
And so this is probably the most controversial part of it for a lot of people. This is kind of make-or-break stuff. They went ahead and pushed all their chips into the center of the table.
I got you.
On this one. So here we go. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
So what happens is the Church of Night, because Lucifer is locked in a... Flesh Acheron doesn't have his powers.
Yep.
So the pagans are getting more powerful, and they're going to take them all out. And part of the thing that they're going to do is they're going to make sacrifices to the Green Man.
The Green Man.
And he's going to come and take over everything. And the crazy thing is that they are 100% completely successful.
Yeah, that is super crazy. He wants to turn the Earth into plant people, and what do you know? Earth gets turned into plant people.
Yes, they bring about the apocalypse, and it's pretty crazy.
It is. It was a little jarring because I guess this is a drawback of binging the series because it's, you know, I was watching one in quick succession to the other. So to have everything be current and then episode 8 is like, well, 10 years or decades have passed and here we are. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. I mean, it would just see everybody die.
Yes.
It's just like, what?
Ambrose is left. Sabrina is trapped in stone, but then Sabrina gets saved by Sabrina.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing.
And there's the one line I had in my notes just because I loved it so much, and it proves that Ambrose is one of the best characters in the series, is that to explain it to herself, Sabrina says, yeah, it's kind of like Back to the Future. You know that movie that Ambrose loves? And I was like, yes, Ambrose.
Well, yes, and Ambrose is awesome too because he's the only one who survives the apocalypse.
Yes.
Well, maybe not the only one, but the only one we know.
I think the only one out of the Spellmans, yeah.
Yeah, who survives the apocalypse. And man, it's great. He's all like gone all Doc Brown.
But he's leveled up because he's been trapped with his book, so he's become the ultimate librarian, archiver sort of wealth of knowledge.
Yes. Yeah. The one thing that, the one thing about this whole thing that made me go, that is stupid, is those plant zombies. They got like, their eyes are like daisies or that. I mean, I don't know if they pulled that from somewhere. I don't know if they had to have. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was silly to me. Run out of makeup budget? Could you not have like shambling mini tree ants or something that looked like, but they just took people and drew like veiny looking things on them and make them look like they had leaf skin and then put like daisies on over their eyes. They were the goofiest looking thing ever.
They were so bright, yeah, like sunflowers.
They were so not scary to me. They weren't scary. It was like, what?
I get it. The thought that popped into my head is that there was the really successful movie Midsommar, that recent horror movie by Ari Aster that came out, I think, last year. But probably around the time they were producing it, that was a big theme because Midsommar is very like Swedish flower earth festival. And it was a lot of those tones, like plant people like that. And I think because like...
And then plant people like that? Just like that?
Not just like that, but... You could definitely make at least a visual connection, sort of similarity between the two aesthetics.
I don't know. They look silly to me, straight up.
I get it.
And the fact that like Ambrose literally called them the plant zombies. I mean, you're pulling out these words like Akron and Nagini and stuff, and then all you can come up with is plant zombies? I mean...
Yeah, and your bad guy is called the Green Man? Really? He's just green? That's it?
I don't mind the Green Man because I think that's a thing.
That's an old, yeah. Old.
Yeah, and that's fine. But you couldn't find, just like make it whatever plant zombie is in Latin or something. Do something.
Photoxenomorphs?
Something.
Venus fly people?
I mean, it looked like something you'd see Go-Go dancing in the background of a like 1967 music video or something.
Like a laughing skit. It's like, hey, it's the Daisy people. Yeah, I get it.
That's the only problem I had with the apocalypse.
Yeah.
But her going around and seeing like the bones of like all her and figuring out who everyone was and stuff.
Yeah, that
was crazy.
Oh.
That was so cool. The sets were so cool.
Very much so. A lot of cool set pieces. It had a little bit of a Beetlejuice vibe, had a little bit of a Tim Burton, but still also a little Geiger Hellraiser type to it.
Right. So, but that's the thing. So Sabrina was trapped in stone. And then she gets herself out, which is weird, and tells her that she has to come back and do it again. It's crazy. It's like wibbly wobbly timey wimey for sure.
Yeah, I said that at the top of this. I said there's a lot going on this season. And I think this is kind of one of the parts where it suffers because I think they could have made this like done 9 episodes and make this a 2-parter just because there is so wibbly wobbly time stuff going on. Because it's all justified. We have that time egg, the little Cthulhu baby. So, you know, that all makes sense. But they still, like, it seems like everybody's fast traveling in the last episode. Like it's a video game, you know? It's like, we got to go to hell. Yes. We got to go to the Dorian's bar. We got to go to the Spellman house. All right, back
to
hell. Okay, back to the bar.
Yeah, right. It was a little rushed, wasn't it?
But, I mean, if their budget was only 8 episodes, I get it. I'm just saying, would have been cooler to see it as a 2-parter.
Yeah, I think I very much agree with that. I very much agree with that. So the ultimate spoiler is how it ends up.
Yes.
So, of course, Sabrina is successful in going back, like back to the future, going back to the point in time to stop
Marty from kissing his mom? No.
Yeah, basically. and rectify the timeline, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and Ambrose agrees with it, and then she's supposed to just go back and do it again for eternity.
Yeah,
basically.
Complete the time loop, kind of.
Yeah, but Sabrina never does what she's supposed to do, does she?
She's a quirky teenage girl who likes to spice things up.
What'd she do to spice it up, Mikey?
She split into two. There are two Sabrinas in the world.
Oh, my gosh.
But what's interesting is that it's a great concept, and it's interesting because like it seems like because of the time split between the two Sabrinas, it has her in two different like emotional states because she is a teenage girl. There's a lot going on in her life, but one of her sides goes to be the queen of hell because that's the side of her that wants power, and one of them goes back to her family because that side of her that just wants to be part of her family and be part of her coven and just live her life.
It's what we talked about earlier in the episode of what from episode one of this series, it's about a girl who's struggling between her mortal life and her witch life.
Yeah.
So she decides to just split herself in two and like this one will live the mortal life. This one will live the witch life and everything will be fine. Right. Right.
Right. Until our favorite Ambrose comes in. He's like, wait, you did what? 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 No. And then he starts freaking out and you're like, oh, yeah, maybe this is a bad thing.
End of season. yeah. Oh man. Wow.
There's a lot that happens, but oh, there's so much cool stuff in here that demands a rewatch or at least a first watch.
Yes, it does. So, pizza rating, Mikey, before our pizza actually gets here.
Yeah.
Out of 8 slices of pizza, where do you put this season of Sabrina?
Season 3. I'm blanking on the pizza rating we gave it in our past episodes. I probably should have looked that up. But I know we were favorable on it. So this one really does. I'm going to say 8 slices, but it's plain cheese.
Oh.
Yeah. So like full 8 slices, like all 8 episodes were good. There wasn't really an episode I felt like skipping.
Oh, yeah. There's 8 slices, 8 episodes. I never thought.
So that's my justification. But the reason it gets no toppings is because all the toppings they wanted to add to my pizza were the romantic love triangles and, oh, here's this little spicy complexity and don't you like anchovies on your pizza? And I was like, no, just give me the plain cheese with the cool backstory and the characters I love. So 8 slices, but take out the weird toppings they were trying to offer me. Is that weird analogy?
No, this is how we do it. We do it how we want to do it.
Exactly.
You just have to deal with it. And if you don't understand what it means, oh, well.
Exactly.
So, yeah, for me, I enjoyed it greatly. I thought it was a good showing of Sabrina. I really enjoyed, we didn't really talk about it, the creepiness of the episode where it had the ice cream man.
Oh, yeah.
That was dark and scary and made so much sense for him to have that deal. That was dark.
Yeah, great complexity for Sabrina being the queen of hell, too, and getting into the job, yeah.
But that was a cool episode to me. But I'm going to have to take a slice away for some of the silly stuff that was throwing me off. The band stuff bumped me. Yep. I get it, but it bumped me.
Gotcha.
I don't know if it could have been done differently. The cheerleader stuff bumped me. I don't know if that could have been done. Because they were playing to the camera. That was weird to me. And at least with the band stuff, they're just in the garage.
Yeah.
The planned zombies bumped me. But all of that stuff, all that stuff that bumped me isn't going to take more than a slice away because everything else was really good to me. I really liked that they were bold enough to take out some characters I didn't think they would.
Yes.
I always feel bad for the actors, though. But anyway, I'm giving it 7 out of 8 slices of pizza.
Cool.
And you can put pepperoni on there if you want.
I get it, though. Yeah, the musical interludes, if that's the first time they've done them, I think, is for this. So it is a different change of pace.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if that was there from the jump, I don't think it would have bothered me as much.
But it is so musical-esque where they're talking. And it's like, all right, I'm talking, and here I go breaking out into song. And it's like, no, don't do that. Quit it. Stop.
Yeah, but we know you like that kind of thing, though, because you're very...
I'm
happy
it.
With the musical Buffy episode.
It's my favorite episode of all the Buffy.
Yeah. So our real pizza is here or there, everywhere.
I got mine. Did you get yours? So,
yeah, I got mine. Actually, my pizza needs to be heated. It's in the fridge. It needs to be heated up.
There you go.
But it will be delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So our pizza's here. We want to thank everyone for listening. Our numbers have been up a lot, so we know that it's a good thing for us that everyone is looking for things to listen to. So for all the new listeners out there, hi, how you doing? We hope you're enjoying everything that we're doing. Once this all blows over, we'll finally be able to get out there again and everything. We are working on a Patreon page, so get ready for that to be announced eventually. One of the things that we're going to do on that page is extra episodes, which are kind of hard to do when we're all like this. So maybe once we can really, really get together again.
Back when we can start high-fiving, shaking hands, and causing smiles.
That'll show up. But either way, we have a whole bunch of guests who want to come on. We're going to figure out how to do that remotely. Yeah. So you'll hear some voices. We're creeping up on our 100th episode. We originally had planned to do big things and have tons of people in and stuff. So the way everything's going, we'll see how that works out. So we love you guys. Yeah. Stay safe out there. Thanks for listening. We also want to thank Peoples, That Guy Brad, for doing our announcing, Jazzar for doing our music, Not Scott Productions for our equipment. And once again, thank everyone so much for being with us.
You guys are the best. You're magical.
Like Sabrina.
Pow.
Look at the cow. Ready when you are. Sibilance.
Unless we want to try and sync up singing It's Tricky. It's tricky to rap a rhyme, it's right on time, it's tricky. One of the cheerleading routines they did. They used a Run DMZ song.
Oh my goodness gracious. Yeah.
Okay.